Hello, everyone. Let's go. Yeah. Hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views. This is show number 113. Today is March 18th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the social and political issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your television off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept their madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. The revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome, folks. Welcome to show number 113. What do we have for you tonight? I got a lot planned. As you know, former President Bush was in Calgary yesterday having a conversation, apparently. A lot of Canadians were pretty upset about that. I'm going to have a couple of those on the show who were there. This includes Splitting the Sky, who was arrested in Calgary. He was attempting to, make a citizen's arrest on Bush. Accompanying him, Professor Tony Hall. Both of these gentlemen have been on my show in the past. Something funny happened to Tony Hall maybe 2 weeks back. He was giving a lecture in Winnipeg, or presenting a paper concerning whether or not George Bush should be allowed into the country. And he was met with a frightening response. It was kind of these, we'll hear his story, of course, but it seemed like a bunch of conservative wackos just kind of really got into his face and gave him the going over. Scary stuff. That's going to be happening in, not very long, maybe five minutes or so. That'll be the first little bit of the show. They are in Lethbridge right now. Tony Hall has just finished his university course as the professor, that is. And we're going to be talking to him, still from his class. So there we are. Also, I have another interview. This will be coming up in the second half hour with Inge Hanley. She is a peace activist and a truth activist, as well as a grandmother who feels that she's being called back to duty to inform her fellow citizens that we're living in some real scary times. Fascinating lady. She sent me a lot of information in preparation for this. And as a matter of fact, one of them, she refers to this new world order as an octopus. And The head, apparently, according to this outline here, is made up of five different systems. The financial system, the political system, the educational system, the food production system, and then, of course, the medical health system. Fascinating stuff. I'm looking forward to hearing what Inga Hanley has to say about that. She's in Vancouver. We'll be calling her there in the second half hour. I have some audio pieces that I may or may not get to. Noam Chomsky talking about, life in America is not a democracy, as well as Democratic Representative Dennis Kucinich talking about nationalizing the Fed, the Federal Reserve Bank, which is neither federal nor does it have a reserve. You're hard labor for the rest of your life. That's its reserve, as a matter of fact. Another one, this comes to us from a video documentary. It's called Money Talks, Profits Before Patient Safety. It's a 50-minute documentary looking at the questionable marketing tactics of the pharmaceutical industry and features commentary of investigative journalists and medical professionals. So those are some of the things. Also, I guess, a fairly big release in the world of alternative news. This is a story I've been following, Obama, and can we trust this fellow? You know, he was all about change, wasn't he? Well, this is what just happened this week. Alex Jones' latest film, The Obama Deception, was released. And let me give you a quick rundown. The Obama Deception is a hard-hitting film that completely destroys the myth that Barack Obama is working in the best interests of the American people. The Obama phenomenon is a hoax, carefully crafted by the captains of the New World Order. He is being pushed as savior in an attempt to con the American people into accepting global slavery. Now, I guess, again, this comes from the little write-up at Google Video, which is where you can see this. You can also visit his website, one of which is Infowars.com. So, carrying on here, just imagine me with a kind of a real rough, tough-in-your-face voice, one of those great movie announcers. We have reached a critical juncture in the New World Order's plans, and only by exposing the con can we help to save America, or save freedom in America, and Canada, I'll add. The Obama deception is not about left or right, it is about one world government. The international banks plan to loot the people of the United States and to turn them into slaves on a global plantation. Covered in this film, who Obama works for, what lies he has told, and his real agenda, and how his initial appointments and actions prove he serves the corporate oligarchs, not the American people. If you want to know the facts and cut through all the hype, this film is for you. It is The Obama Deception, just released this week. I've seen it, and I was quite impressed with it. A good see. So, I had another fantastic piece lined up. I'm not going to get to it. It was Ron Paul looking at what if the Chinese military was policing Canada or America. It was a fascinating piece that, you know, just put ourselves in their shoes for a little while and see how it feels. Okay, so let me see. I do have a couple other shorter audio pieces. For example, right now while I get Splitting the Sky and Professor Tony Hall on the phone, this is what it sounded like of Splitting the Sky being arrested in Calgary yesterday. That's March 17th. So we'll play that, and then we'll be back with Splitting the Sky and Professor Tony Hall on the phone. Okay, so...
I'm not touching you. You're touching me. Okay.
Okay, there it is. That is what it sounded like. John Vancouver splitting the sky, being arrested yesterday in Calgary. I have splitting the sky on the phone right now. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, hey, thanks for coming on. Now, you had a hell of a day yesterday, it sounds like. We don't have a lot of time. Can you kind of tell us what, of course, Bush was giving a conversation there, apparently, and there was quite a few people there protesting that a war criminal would be in speaking in Canada. So if you can kind of take us from there.
Yeah, so yeah, basically, like, what it was is that Bush come to town in Calgary at the invitation of the Chamber of Commerce and a law firm called the Bennett Jones.
Yeah.
And Ernst & Young, and he came to Calgary for a $500 a plate, 1,500 people, $500,000, man, to come give a talk.
Mm-hmm.
And while we consider George Bush to be a torturer, a murderer, and a suspected international terrorist.
Absolutely.
And according to Canadian law, this man cannot come into Canada, he'd be in violation of Canadian law, barring anybody suspected of war crimes. And so we tried to position government leaders as well as provincial leaders, as well as judiciary process, to ban him from Canada. But, of course, you know, it's a collaborating class, and they can collaborate with one another. So there was a heavy police presence there. There were 1,500 people lined up at the TELUS building in Calgary to hear this guy and to give him his money, to give him their money. And there was probably close to 700 of us that eventually amassed in front of their protesting. Now, there was a lot of media there, and there was a big RCMP presence in front of the TELUS building, allowing just those that had paid. And I had said, and I was organizing for the last 40 days, you know, a demonstration against Bush coming into this country. And I was totally sincere about arresting Bush for crimes, war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Now
and worldwide.
You personally were attempting to do a citizen's arrest upon him. Is that correct?
Well, what I did is I confronted all the RCMP and the police line, and I asked them if they were going to arrest Bush for war crimes, and to where, of course, they said no. I said, in that case, then I am charging you with complicity in genocide and subsequently your derelict in your duty, and I am going to deputize myself and do the job that you should be doing. And if I intend to make a citizen's arrest, do you intend to arrest me? Yes, they said yes, they did. I said, well, then I guess here's where we see what happens. And so I grabbed two of the bicycles and I pulled them apart and I just broke the police line, walked straight through, wherein I was accosted by a number of police and beaten down very hard into the concrete, stomped, and kicked in my groins. My head was bashed, and then I was handcuffed in the back, thrown in a paddy wagon, and I was given another beating when I got inside the prison there.
Okay, now, so you spent the rest of the day there. You just got out this morning, is that correct?
I just got out as of 1 o'clock this afternoon.
Okay, and your longtime workmate, Professor Tony Hall, I believe, picked you up, and you guys headed back to Lethbridge, where you are now?
I just finished giving a talk after being completely sleepless all night long in the prison. And thank God there was a lot of Tony Hall and many other people were at the prison. They spent most of the night in the hallways downstairs making sure that that nothing went wrong with me, that they didn't try killing me on the inside of the police station there.
Right, right. Wow, holy moly. There's a lot of coverage on this, you know, some by the CBC, which I've seen a couple of pieces that seemed an awful lot like propaganda. And then there's a number of videos that were shown by, you know, fellow Be the Media citizens that, you know, got this stuff on YouTube right quick.
Yes.
So, you know, there's kind of two medias going on right now.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah. Let me see. I believe that Dr. Hall is nearby. Now, he recently had an incident as well in Winnipeg. I'm hoping that he can share that story as well as his perspective on this Bush incident as well.
I'll put him on with you right now. Hold on.
I appreciate that.
Hello.
Dr. Hall, welcome back to the show.
Yes. Thank you for having us on.
Yes, indeed. Now, you were in Calgary yesterday and as well as this morning, and but I'm wondering if maybe I could have you share your recollection of what you experienced there, as well as you had a pretty creepy thing happen when you were presenting a paper in Winnipeg. I'm wondering if maybe you can touch on that as well, because the paper you were presenting was on reasons why Bush should not be allowed in Canada or as a war criminal. So
yes, I was invited by the sociology department, especially Professor Rimke there.
Okay.
Heidi Rimke. The sociology department picked me to do their annual lecture. The timing was such that I did the paper, Bush League Justice, Should George W. Bush Be Arrested in Calgary, Alberta, to be tried for international crimes. It's quite widely disseminating on the Internet right now, including in French. Anyway, I presented the paper. There was no security guards around the area. At the end of the presentation, a group of journalists, they call themselves journalists, one called herself a professor, is a professor, Professor Schaefer. I was surrounded, and a swastika was thrust in front of me. The swastika is actually a symbol on Montreal 9/11 truth. Patrick Buron did a film, Metro, about Israeli security firm and the Montreal metro system, and what filmmakers allege was an effort to set up a false flag act in the Montreal subway system.
That's
so
right.
So in any case, the fact that one of my articles had appeared on Montreal 9/11 Truth, and that it had this symbol, there was an effort to say, well, do you know what this symbol signifies? In other words, the swastika, implying, and suggesting that because my article was on a site with a swastika, I'm somehow associated with Nazism and anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
The article is can be looked at. It's on something called the Jewish Post in Winnipeg. In any case, this was the background of this. Leslie Hughes was actually there, and she was subjected to a pretty public beating because she'd written about 9/11 in a paper in 2002, and when she was a liberal candidate in the last election, this Blackrod did an article, this anonymous blogger, and many of your listeners will know the story, that she was disqualified as a liberal candidate, that essentially she was beaten up in the public square.
That's right.
And, nobody really came to her assistance. It's really shameful that journalists in Canada have stooped to the point where they'll take a source, an anonymous blogger who has no accountability for his, her, or their writings, and go with the story. Jonathan Kay at the National Post, for instance, the CanWest Global operation has its headquarters in Winnipeg. The same Blackrod had targeted me in an article at the end of December. So I asked the journalist immediately, was she there because of this Blackrod article? She said yes. In any case, I was kind of surrounded and in a sense, put on trial. Heidi Rimke had been shown the swastika, and she, I think, lost some composure and went into tears. She is of German ancestry. So it was surprising that the University of Winnipeg, hadn't created some sort of a safe environment where we could discuss difficult issues in our time. And, of course, the paper that I actually delivered, Bush League Justice, these journalists didn't, so-called journalists or alleged journalists or real journalists, didn't even address the presentation that I actually made. They obviously came with an agenda.
Yeah. It seems very peculiar that, the work of yourself and others in this truth movement are trying to expose the modern fascists and here so many of them are targeted by the corporate media as being Nazis. You know, they've got it backwards.
Well, in my understanding, Nazism in Germany came from the right wing of the political spectrum, and it's so weird that very right wing people are pointing at liberals and social democrats and those in the middle of the political spectrum or on the left of the political spectrum and saying, you're associated with Nazism. No, I think it's the right wing of the political spectrum that carries the legacy of Nazism. But, you know, it speaks to the fact that our media is so distorting reality presenting a fantasy as if it's reality, that we've lost any orientation to, you know, what is true. I mean, the 9/11 truth movement, if you go to the Montreal 9/11 site, you'll see that they're interested in pursuing many truths. Many, you know, once you start questioning the prevalent lie, seeking truth rather than public mythology, yes, we've got to get to the heart of what really happened on 9/11, but this is part of a far bigger reality that we're being manipulated in mainstream media so badly, and these sort of, I felt it was like a false flag operation intellectually, academically, to be exposed, you know, to simply be put in a position where I really couldn't, I didn't know where the reception was, I didn't know where to go, I was sort of left alone with, in the hallway with, I couldn't really move, I was kind of cornered and essentially, presented with the swastika and somehow, said, you know, account for your association with the swastika. And
right.
it was really surprising, and I really think the University of Winnipeg, has some responsibility here. Lloyd Axworthy, who is the president of the University of Winnipeg.
Okay.
It was Israeli Anti-Apartheid Week, and Heidi Rimka did show the letter that Lloyd Axworthy wrote to the whole university saying there had to be special precautions for security during this week, and I was presenting during this week. You know, to work in a university, to work in a setting where we want to have a deep and substantial debate on important matters of the day.
Yeah.
There's got to be some protections and some orderly conduct when it comes to these debates. And I didn't see any respect for that principle whatsoever at the University of Winnipeg.
Sure. What's been the reaction as far as the Bush? I know that you were involved in trying to spread the word out to keep Bush out of the country. What is your quick take on that? Did you get a lot of positive response, or was it all just kind of ignored emails?
I was at Calgary for the action. I've been speaking with Gail Davidson. I saw Gail Davidson on MSNBC.
That's right.
On Oberman.
Yeah.
Yesterday. So there's obviously interest in this story. Maybe not in Calgary. They don't seem to want to report it honestly there, but in the United States, interestingly. Bennett Jones, a big legal firm, is one of the sponsors of the event. In the pamphlet advertising the event that was given to all the 1,500 people who attended, the first big advertisement is by Bennett Jones. Frank McKenna was the moderator. Heather Douglas is president and CEO of Calgary Chamber of Commerce. But the role of Bennett Jones, I think the idea that there needs to be some accountability from a legal firm who would sponsor George W. Bush, who many have good cause to view as a war criminal. You know, he hasn't had a trial. We can't really, you know, he's innocent till proven guilty. We're not going to say he's an unlawful enemy combatant, put him down in the dungeon, torture him, and do the kind of thing that his regime has been doing. No, I want to hear George Bush's defense. But in any case, there's very good cause to arrest him, to put him on trial, and the idea that a legal firm in Calgary is the main one of the main hosts of George Bush. And I must say, at the University of Lethbridge here, Josh Blakeney has started the campaign because Bennett Jones is the University of Lethbridge's lawyers. Is it the case that University of Lethbridge students have part of their tuition go to support George Bush coming to southern Alberta here?
Right. Very frustrating. I would like to thank you for taking time out of your busy day.
Yeah.
So thank you, Professor Tony Hall of Lethbridge, and I'm not going to say goodbye to him, but give my best to Splitting the Sky, John Bancor, for me.
Yeah, and check out how widely that article is proliferating on the Internet. It's quite surprising. Voltairenet translated into French. It was one of the big news stories in France.
Very nice.
So this event has really has captured a lot of international attention as far as I can see.
Okay, what's the title of that? I'll link it on my website as well.
It's Bush League Justice. Should George W. Bush be arrested in Calgary, Alberta? To be tried for international crimes.
Okay, very nice.
Anthony J. Hall, Globalization Studies, University of Lethbridge.
I appreciate you coming on the show again, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future.
Cheerio.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Okay, there it is. Fantastic. I feel bad that interview probably could have gone on for quite a bit longer, no doubt. However, I do have a... another exciting hour and a half coming up on the Unbought and Unboss show. You're listening to CHLY 101.7 in the Central Vancouver Island area. We're also online at chly.ca. We're going to get now to the... Where are we going to get to? We're going to get to the weather update. So here's the little piggy song for you. There we are. That's the... CHLY weather update. Is that brought to by anyone special? No, it's being brought to us by the three financial supporters of this show and CHLY. They are the Edmonton 9/11 Truth Group, the Victoria 9/11 Truth Group, and Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth. Thanks to that. Also out of Fraser Valley, Wayne Pronte of WarCriminalsOut.com. has been working with Splitting the Sky and Professor Tony Hall as well. So visit warcriminalsout.com, and thanks to Wayne for helping this interview take place. So where we are going to go now is to a telephone interview with Inga Hanley. She is a peace and truth activist, a grandmother who says that she's being called back to duty. And I read that quick piece on the Obama deception, talking about a new world order. Well, I have a feeling that that's going to be the umbrella of which this interview takes place with Inga out of Vancouver. So I'm going to put on a song while I get Inga on the phone, and we're going to hear War Criminal George. That's rather appropriate, considering Bush was speaking in Calgary yesterday. So this is by John Asher. And the Angry Brigade. So there we go. Talk to you real soon. Okay, there we are. That is... Oh, who is that? That's John Asher and the Angry Brigade, War Criminal George. I felt that went in pretty good with some of the topics that I've covered so far on the show. So moving on to another one, I would like to welcome to the show for the first time Inga Hanley of Vancouver. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Now, you are a peace and truth activist. You are a grandmother. What else do you want us to know about you?
I'm just someone who's extremely concerned about what we're leaving to our children, to our grandchildren. I'm very, very concerned about the fact that I am seeing the destructuring of our whole and demolition of our whole civilization as we know it. We're heading straight to a police state. The day I saw 9/11 happen, it took me half an hour to say inside job.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it didn't even take me, everything else just fit in as it progressed.
Sure.
And when I saw the Patriot Act passed, I realized that it was a direct translation of the laws that Hitler brought in to dissolve democratic government in Germany.
Okay.
He even used the exact translation for things like the Homeland Security, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Yeah, that's right.
And so therefore, as far as I was concerned, we at that point established the same kind of dictatorship that evolved in Germany.
Sure.
And by the way, it's really being done by the same people.
Yes, yeah, you're right. Now, how is it that you first became politically active? Was 9/11 a wake-up for you, or have you been looking into these issues for years? What's
I started out with fluoride 30 years ago.
Okay, fluoride in the water?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's rather interesting that right now the U.S. administration is trying to force mandatory fluoridation in the states. The public is fighting it tooth and nail, because they know the truth about fluoride.
Yeah. Yeah.
I call it the fluoride is the truth decay.
Mm-hmm. Good one. Yeah, that works nicely.
Literally, you know that when they brought in fluoride, it was the dilution solution to pollution.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when it came to fluoride, you had the aluminum industry, you had the phosphorus industry. These are all industries that were coming up in the 20s, 30s, 40s.
Okay.
And then you had the nuclear industry, and uranium is a fluoride ore, okay?
Okay.
Fluoride is a very reactive substance, and so therefore you find it combined in all of these minerals. Now, when you want to extract the minerals, you have to separate it from the fluoride, and you're left with this very, very toxic substance, and you don't know what to do with it because fluoride is used for etching glass, so you know that you can't store it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't until they made Teflon, which is a fluoride product, that they could even line anything that wouldn't be eaten through immediately.
Wow, okay.
So how do you get rid of this stuff? And you know that, the Middle West had natural fluoride because of the rock out there that was so toxic that people's teeth and bones, etc., were literally being demolished.
Okay.
And so in the 20s and 30s, the U.S. government mandated that they defluoridate the drinking water down to one part per million, which at that time, through observation, they didn't see anybody just falling over dead, okay?
Okay.
You have to remember that natural fluoride is a calcium fluoride, and it's relatively bound. In other words, it doesn't ionize that easily. So even though that was very toxic, it's not nearly as toxic as this stuff that they get in industry now, which is very reactive. And so they got the bright idea, well, if they consider one part per million to be the safe limit for defluoridating the drinking water, then let's just use that as the optimum level and convince the people that that is where they should be going up to rather than down to.
Okay.
So the maximum safe level then actually became the desirable level in the propaganda.
Right, right.
And I have the minutes of the 1951 secret meeting where they launched fluoridation through all of the public health thing, and they admitted that they had no evidence. And someone said, well, why should we do research? And the answer that came back was, well, we've told them it's safe, so we can't go back on that now, so why do research?
Right, right.
I've been, ever since then, it's just one thing after another, and it always follows the same pattern.
Okay.
We have, right now, we have probably the most corrupt scientific scenario ever in this country. There is very little science that comes out of government offices that really is anything but pseudoscience. It's propaganda. It's written for a purpose. And it's written to suit this huge, monopolistic, corporate, toxic, chemical, conglomerate.
Yeah, a little bit of everything involved.
Oh, it's all integrated. And what worries me as a grandmother with grandchildren is that everything that we have done in the last 50 years has gone in the wrong direction. If you want to heal this planet and you want to go in the exact opposite direction, then do what our governments are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are literally, in terms of the public health, HPB used to be called the Health Protection Branch.
Okay.
And then I relabeled that as the health prevention branch, and I have now relabeled it again as the health prohibition branch. Because we are literally seeing legislation being brought in that prohibits people from trying to stay healthy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in your outline, you refer to it as a sickness management system, you know, as opposed to a wellness management.
Well, the sickness management system is bad enough. But then when you actually get government policies that make people sick, do you want a few of them?
Absolutely.
Well, fluoridation is one.
Yeah.
Fluoridation definitely makes people sick. Then you have food irradiation.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Herbst, in 1968, he was a professor at the and head of the Department of Radiology in Freiburg, 1968. And he was so alarmed at what he was finding in the terms of the propaganda, that he actually broke ranks and he wrote a paper. I have that paper, and I can send it to you.
Yeah, I'd love that. Thanks.
And do you know that food irradiated stuff is so bad that when you irradiate some kind of a plant substance and you compost it and then try to grow something on it, you get chromosome defects.
Oh, no kidding.
It is that toxic. And if you want to demolish a civilization, you insist that they eat irradiated food.
Yeah.
Now, part of the laws that they want to bring down in the United States is that in the name of safety, remember you had some lettuce that was contaminated or some spinach that was contaminated. I personally am convinced that these so-called contaminations are 9/11s.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Well, they're false flags. What I'm saying is if you want to scare the people about safety, you make sure that you have some kind of a contamination event.
Okay.
Okay? And then you take forever to find it, and then it's so widespread, and oh boy, you better control every leaf that grows and every animal that is eaten, because it's all just riddled with all these dangerous things, right?
Yeah. You haven't mentioned genetically engineered foods, which it seems
that.
I know you are, and that's exactly what you're talking about.
No, that's something else.
Within the food.
Just in terms of the way they grow things, and of course, you know, when you're talking about the dilution solution to pollution,
okay,
fluoride was one. And then they had this radioactive material that from the nuclear industry, and they had the bright idea of spreading that over the land as fertilizer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they had frogs with six legs and all kinds of deviant things. But it's almost as though they want to spread the contamination out over everything.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
The dilution solution to pollution is not just in those areas. It's everything. You take the city sludge and you sell it as fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the city sludge has every blasted toxic chemical in it that you can think of.
Of course.
You know, and so we go on and on that way. And food irradiation is just one. And then you have genetically engineered foods. The only reason we have genetically engineered foods is because this huge conglomerate, I call it the crime syndicate, okay?
Okay.
And it's basically the elite bankers and the elite corporate owners. And it's not the little companies I'm talking about. I'm talking about the monopolies, the Monsantos.
Yeah, the multinationals, yeah.
There are some that stand out even more than. If you want the epitome of the devil, look at Monsanto.
Yeah.
Literally. And we are being Monsanto-ized.
Yeah.
Because the CEOs and the people that work, that are really on the top of promoting Monsanto, are the ones that are writing the laws. We have a game of musical chairs.
With the government and the CEOs, exactly.
I mean, the FDA is owned by Big Pharma.
Yeah.
And what actually happens, look how they do it. The government said, oh, we don't have enough money to fund the FDA. So then Big Pharma says, oh, don't worry about that. We'll help you out. We'll give you a couple of million. We'll fund FDA.
Yeah, we'll be honest.
Yeah, exactly. We'll own it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're aware of the fact that in 1900, the ANA was privatized. the American Medical Association was privatized.
Well, I know that Rockefeller has a lot of influence and money involved in that.
Influence? He owns it. No, literally. There were three people who were on the editorial staff before 1900.
Okay.
And Rockefeller money was used to get them elected to be the board of the AMA.
Right.
And within 2 years, they privatized it. And from that point on, the AMA was a private corporation.
Mm.
And it ran for the exclusive purpose of eradicating competition to Big Pharma.
Right.
See, Rockefeller was the chemical industry, Standard Oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he determined, in fact, his philosophy was, there is nothing as sinful as allowing competition.
Mm.
And he had a modus operandi, and it was, try to buy them out, and if you can't buy them out, you wipe them out.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Buy them out, or you wipe them out.
Mm.
You get some of them, like Morgan, etc., and he bought those out, and they became partners, okay?
Mm. Well, it was just a few years after that, they moved their interests also into the educational system.
This is where I'm talking about the octopus. And if you look at the history from 1900 to 1910,
mm-hmm.
in 1910 you had the Flexner Report. The Flexner Report was commissioned by Rockefeller,
okay.
who paid the government to do it, because after all, the government didn't have any money. Rockefeller was just so eager. By the way, in that period, that's when the foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie,
that's
they
right.
were all formed during that time. And Rockefeller used his foundation money, on which he didn't have to pay taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he would go to universities. It's a time lag here. It takes a while to get this big machinery done, because you have to get rid of the old before you can get the new in. So he would go to universities and say, look, we'd love to give you $5 million. Not in those days, that was a lot of money,
sure.
right? Now, but, you know, if Mr. So-and-so is someone we would really like to see as dean of the Department of Chemistry, the Department of Medicine, and the Department of Agriculture. Those were the three.
Mm.
The Department of Science, the Department of Agriculture, Department of Medicine.
Okay, so to put their own men in the chief seats.
They put their own men in the chief seats. And then they then very, very generously supplied the experts from the universities. And you're a little bit of a joke, and this actually happened. All of the experts who came to Council of Farmers came from the universities, came from the chemical industry. And so they were telling them that the NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium fertilizers was all they needed, and they could farm with great profits and huge crops, etc. And in the back of the room, there was an old agronome listening to this lecture. And in the question period, he put up his hand and he said, sir, would you tell me what you do about trace minerals? And the expert shot back and said, oh, we don't pay any attention to trace minerals. We don't think that they're important.
Mm.
And very dryly, the old agronome said, you know, that is a pity, because the plants do, and they didn't go to university.
Yeah, wow.
You know.
Mm.
And, of course, then you have the mandatory vaccination program that the government sponsors.
That's awfully frightening, yeah.
It's very frightening. Mm. Then you have the wireless cell phones, which we know now cause cancer. What the cell phone wireless radiation actually does, and not only the cell phone, now we have wireless computers, right?
Yep. Yeah, just about wireless everything now.
If you are between the receiver and the producer of a wireless network, you are exposed to that radiation, and the cells that operate on electromagnetic frequencies, these frequencies are totally destructive to the nervous system and to the cell function of the body, and so the cell literally shuts down. You destroy metabolic function because the cell shuts down and no longer lets things in and out.
Hmm.
And so it's totally metabolic destructive.
Okay.
And, of course, then you have things like aspartame and MSG. I was very involved when they brought in the new guidelines to Health Canada. This is about 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I made a very interesting observation. The things that they classify as food additives are considered to be in the food category
mm-hmm.
and generally considered safe and therefore not needing any further monitoring or observation. And in that category, you have MSG, you have aspartame, you have red number 40 and all the other food colorings that are all carcinogenic. But if something is even vaguely suggestive of being therapeutic, then it must be absolutely and totally controlled, because after all, we've got to make sure that it is as effective as you say it is, right?
Yeah, when really, of course, how do you get money out of people picking the weeds in the front yard and, making their own...
I'd like to bring you back to 1910 and the Flexner Report, commissioned by Rockefeller for a purpose.
Okay.
You see, science had never been defined. And in this, we don't look at nature for what nature is and try to discover what nature does. We have to define it. We have to overrule nature. We have to put it under our control and under our infinite wisdom, right?
Mm-hmm.
I call it ignorant arrogance, but then that's something else. The Flexner Report did something very interesting, and I've never seen anyone else allude to that. Just jumped out at me. The Flexner Report defines science, the scientific method, as a linear process. That means that you put one thing in and you look to see whether you get a certain result, right?
Okay. Actually, if we could back up just for a second, is the Flexner Report, is that a congressional document?
Yes, I think it is. It's one that defines science.
Okay.
It's one that determines all of the medical policies. It's one that decided how many universities would they shut down. I don't know, hundreds of medical universities. It was a reorganization of the healthcare system.
Okay.
But what it did more than anything else was that it defined what was science and what was not science, therefore what was scientific and what was not scientific. Now, how many times in the last 40, 50 years have you heard there is no scientific evidence?
All the time on...
All the time.
Huh.
And it's always for things that are natural, right?
Yeah.
Well, nature is synergistic. There's nothing in nature that ever operates alone.
Mm.
You can't say vitamin B6 does this and only that, right?
Yeah.
It works synergistic with all of the other, I don't know how many dozen nutrients, okay?
Yes.
So therefore, you can never test nature in a linear way.
Yeah.
It is... And what the Flexner Report also did, and that was to define diseases. They defined symptoms as diseases. Well, symptoms are really nothing but breakdown conditions. And the cause for the breakdown condition is not always the same. So the word arthritis basically gave you the symptoms of joint problems, right?
Okay.
But you may have 10 different causes in different people that cause this particular breakdown. Now, the AMA had defined, gave names to these, and they have proprietary rights to those names. They own the disease name. Okay? That means that when they wrote the medical bills, the ones that colleges of physicians and surgeons,
yeah,
and whatever else they're called.
Follow, yeah.
Okay. When they wrote those, they said that no one is allowed to treat things, diseases, with these names. You know, the Class A schedule, the Class B schedule, right?
Okay.
Well, that was because they had a proprietary right, a patent on those names. And legally, that's how they did it.
Wow.
It had nothing to do with metabolism. Now, you've given these things names, you own the names, and now you treat towards those names in a linear fashion. Well, the net result was that nature was defined as being unscientific. Nature can't qualify under those definitions of science.
Okay.
So all of nature is unscientific. Now, if that isn't insane, you tell me what's insane.
Yeah. Again, in some of the words that you sent me earlier, you were talking about an analogy of what if a cell decided that it wanted to act independently and only for its own benefit, you know? And I thought that was a real neat way to look at it. And, of course, we call those cancer, you know, those that decide that they're going to work only for their own purposes. But, you know, your greater story was that, well, that's the whole profit system of...
Well, we are in actually the elite. And the top of the elite heap are the big international banks. The first one was the Bank of London. And the Bank of London, Mr. Rothschild had five sons, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Now, Rothschild was the first one who got this idea of fractional banking. And I don't know if you know what fractional banking is.
A little bit. You can fill in the listeners if you'd like.
Okay, with fractional banking, okay, originally the banker, you gave him your savings, and he would then lend out those savings to someone else,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And at that time you had the gold standard. So you gave him, you deposited gold with him for safekeeping, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he would lend out to someone else for interest.
A certain percentage of that gold.
The equivalent of that gold, okay?
Yeah.
Now, Rothschild got the bright idea. He said, well, nobody really knows how much gold people have given me here, right? So I can lend out, I can kind of pretend and lend out twice as much, three times as much, 10 times as much.
Yeah.
Before this collapse here, we were up to 40 times.
No kidding. Wow.
Down in the United States, and I might mention that Bush vetoed any regulator who tried to stop this nonsense in the last 8 years. He literally stopped it cold. Every time a regulator said, hey, there's something going on here, he stopped it cold.
Right, yeah.
He knew it. In other words, this is a manufactured, it is not a meltdown, it is a takedown.
Yes, yes, I agree.
Now, with a fractional banking, you're lending money that doesn't exist. In other words, you're creating counterfeit, okay?
Mm-hmm, basically.
However, the person that you're lending it to doesn't know that. So you're charging interest and making money, usury is what it was called,
mm-hmm.
okay, on money that really doesn't exist. Now, it becomes real money when you have to work for it to pay the interest and pay the principal back.
Yeah.
But the guy, the Rothschilds, made a fortune because they were collecting interest on money that they didn't have to really own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and now this is what they have been doing ever since, literally. And Rothschild, I think he had five sons, and one took over the bank in Paris, and one took over the bank in Berlin, and one took over the bank in Rome.
That's right. Yeah, they spread out throughout Europe. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the financial, what we call capitalism. Capitalism is not free enterprise. In fact, capitalism is the antithesis of free enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, in the 30s or 40s, they created the Monopoly game?
That's right.
That game was created to condition the young children to want to grab and grab and grab until they got it all, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a mindset, right? And so as the one guy who has a lot gets more and gets more and buys everything up, everybody else is cut out of the free enterprise system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you have monopolies.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the other great thing about the game Monopoly, which I'm a fan of that game, at the end of the game, who wins always? The bank. You always put your money back in the bank, and that's kind of a neat way to look at it as well.
Oh, well, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when you're talking about the octopus, it is the same people that own these big banks are also the owners of the multinational corporations.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, I'll show you how this works. And Argentina was their pilot case.
Okay, yeah.
And Argentina was as prosperous as Canada was 5 years, 10 years ago.
Okay.
I mean, we're going downhill very fast.
Yes.
But it was really a very... prosperous country with a solid middle class, with good industries. It was a very progressive, democratic country.
Yes.
Doing very well, thank you. Well, what they did is they go in and they size up the population. They pick out people that are ambitious, that have very low character, that can be corrupted. I don't know if you've seen a Zeitgeist where John Perkins explains how he operates as an economic hitman.
Yeah.
You can go to the library and you can pick up his book, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Mm-hmm.
And in that he says, you know, he apologizes, but nevertheless says, I did this because the perks that they held out for me were such that I didn't want to give them up.
Wow.
I knew I was doing wrong.
Hmm.
And I wanted to write this book for 20 years, but then I would have to give up the perks, and I wasn't prepared to do that.
Hmm.
So in a society that is trained for comfort and profit and with a philosophy of it's, you've got to get to the top, and if you have to step over everybody else to get there, that's fine. You're individualistic. There is no cohesion in your thinking. Instead of competing against your last performance, you compete with the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a win-lose situation, never a win-win situation.
Yeah, that's right.
If you get enough people like that, then you can corrupt the whole society. And it is not just Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld that are corrupted. I see in amongst my friends and acquaintances lots of people that if they can make an extra $10,000 in a corrupt way, they'll do it.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
You know, so the resistance to corruption has been erased in this society.
Hmm.
And I was in the educational system in the 50s and 60s. By the way, my career was finished at the age of 29 because I was exposed to these wonderful chemicals that this chemical industry puts out.
Okay, actually, Inga, if I can cut you off there, I have to do a couple announcements at the top of the hour here.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can put you on hold for about 3 or 4 minutes, I want you to stay on the phone and come back and continue chatting with me. Does that sound good?
Absolutely.
Okay, very nice. Well, thank you. I'm going to take care of that, and then we'll get back into there's a lot of threads that we can pull on here. There's a lot of good discussion. So thank you, Inga, and we'll get back to you shortly. Okay, very nice. So what are we going to... First up, I have a couple ads I'm going to play for you. And so stick around. You're listening to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views. I'm your host, Rami Geisler. You are listening to Inga Hanley in discussion about a whole lot of things. The octopus of this new world structure. And very interesting. A lot of history to pull from and a lot of dust to connect. And so very fascinating. So I'll get back to you in a couple short moments here with more of that. Okay, very nice. There we are. Welcome back to Unbought and Unbossed. I'm in conversation here with Inga Hanley. Inga, you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Hi, well, welcome back.
Thank you.
So that's just one of the things that we have to do on this campus community station. Very nice. You actually started to get into a new thread here, looking a little bit about your medical past, and as well, you mentioned that you were a school teacher. I don't know if you want to take it up from there.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
I was a greenhorn in the 50s, just starting out new. However, you'll find that people that grew up in the country, especially people that grew up on farms, where facts are what they are, crises are what they are, you either solve them or you go under. There's no fliff and fluff and flam. And you'll find that people from the country are very direct and very sensible. So when I hit the city school system, we were told to do specific things. And one of them was that we were not to teach values.
Mm.
And the excuse that they had was, your values are Victorian. I wrote a curriculum once, and in the preface, I put down that I wanted to develop independence, I wanted to develop responsibility, I wanted to develop carry-through-itness. All of these things that we really consider to be the elements of character, right?
Okay.
We were told, that was flung back in my face, that I don't want to ever see anything this Victorian again.
Wow.
A few years later, people in industry were complaining, we're getting people that have no sense of responsibility. They look at the clock for 5 o'clock. They don't want to have any loyalty. We don't get any people that we really can use, right?
Okay.
And they were wondering why. And within a few years, we had people graduating from grade 12, getting to university, and they couldn't read.
Hmm.
We had all kinds of dysfunctional teaching directives. And I remember sitting in that staff room as a 24-year-old greenhorn saying to people, if you do this, you're going to have a totally dysfunctional society in three generations.
Okay. Huh.
They all laughed at me, and they said, well, I don't see it. I said, no, it takes time lag. You have to get rid of the solid grandparents. Then you have to get rid of the fairly solid parents. Then you have to have the first generation that has no parent, no values taught become the parents. With each generation, the teaching of values becomes more watered down because you can't teach something you didn't learn.
Mm.
And I want to use the illustration. If you take a chain, society is really a chain. You go from one generation to the next generation to the next generation, like a link in a chain.
Okay.
You take one link out of that chain so that there's no connection between that generation and the next generation.
Yeah.
And you have broken the thread of civilization.
Hmm.
And that is what happened in the 50s. They come in with slogans. And for the last 50 years, we had education by slogan. Not by depth, not by fact, just slogans.
Okay.
Repeated, over and over and
right.
over, ad infinitum.
Yeah. Indoctrination,
and,
yeah.
And one of the slogans, yeah, it's slogans without any thought process, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they aim to disintegrate the family. So what did they do? They termed the phrase generation gap.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden you heard about the generation gap, the generation gap, the generation gap. And so it became normal for children to have activities and adults to have activities, but children didn't mingle with adults anymore.
Right, right.
And so when you started, then I grew up in a school where you had four rooms and there were three classes in one room. We learned to be independent and work independently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you start in the grade one, that same, you have maybe 25 kids, you move to the next class, the same 25 kids, all the way up to grade 12 with the same 25 kids.
Okay.
Now you have the blind leading the blind because, after all, you're learning everything from your peers.
Yeah.
Now who's learning anything here? And so then you had what you call situationalism, relevance. So you didn't have any solid values and any solid yardsticks. You kind of sized up the situation and you decided on the spot how you felt about it. So we have an entire psychology based on feelings rather than on coping.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an entire dysfunctional society out there. They can't cope because they first have to see how they feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, feeling isn't coping.
Right.
I want you to take the word responsibility and take it apart.
Okay, let's do that.
In the last 50 years, we have not taught children how to become mature, and to become mature, you develop responsibility.
The ability to respond is what you're saying.
The ability to respond. The ability to size up the situation and to draw on your experience to see what the best approach to the best solution is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have totally removed, we don't teach the yardsticks anymore. So every child kind of develops, out of a vacuum, develops his own values, which is can be anything, right? And so from generation to generation to generation, we have become more degenerate in our values.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look out there and you look at their dress and you look at their speech and their entertainment,
yeah.
Violence and sex and it just makes you vomit almost.
I think,
you know?
We need to include television into the discussion here. The television has played, you know, a greater and greater role as being the parent and teacher of morals and values.
Who owns the entertainment business?
Well, the corporations.
The only reason we started having violent video games is because when the soldiers came back from Korea, the army found that only 20% of their soldiers were able to shoot at another human being.
Hmm.
There was an inbuilt aversion to killing another person.
Well, it's not a very good soldier.
No, exactly. And so they decided to remedy that. And the way they remedied that is to make violent entertainment pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
In the society, so even those that didn't become violent would tolerate violence. And so they, oh, that's just normal. I mean, I've heard people say, oh, I've watched those video games and I'm not a violent person, and but we tolerate the wars, we tolerate the crime, we, you know, I've heard people say, but he was only shoplifting, or he only broke into a house, and he only this and only that. Now, let me take it a step further. When they removed the values in the 50s and 60s, they had a reason. And it's the same thing with the financial structure. It's the same thing with the agricultural. It's the same thing with the health. When you want to bring in a new system, you have to demolish and dismantle the old one.
Okay.
And so you go through a dismantling exercise. And once you have dismantled it, you come in. What did we come in with? We came in with political correctness. We came in with thought control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now you can go to prison if you think the wrong thing, right?
Yeah.
Talk about having the wrong religion.
So where are we now? If society's been dismantled, where are we at now in its reassembling?
Well, for the, you know, I found out about the New World Order thing about 1990. And at that time, I was in a panic, like, hey, let's tell everybody, find out, you know, we've got to stop this. Nobody wanted to know anything about it. In those 20 years, they have put all of their ducks in order. And at this point, they are passing one piece of legislation after another, bang, 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 that brings in, we are already under a police dictatorship. Now, people think that a dictatorship has to have people, soldiers in the streets, right? Well, you only have soldiers in the streets if the people are resisting.
Mm-hmm.
So far, nobody has resisted here.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've always dangled enough carrots, right?
Yeah.
Everyone was doing just fine, thank you. And
do you not find that there are more people waking up right now? Like, I know
a number
of Canadians had took issue with Bush allowed into Canada, which, you know, as a war criminal, you know, if we hold laws to be meaningful at all, we should be following them.
Yeah, no, but what happened with the Patriot Act is that anyone who resists the government or anything that the government does is a terrorist, be it external or domestic.
Yeah.
And do you know that down in the States, they have now labeled Ron Paul officially as a domestic terrorist? I mean,
oh,
can you get more absurd? I mean, is there a man walking down there in Congress that has more character than Dennis Kucinich in Ron Paul?
Well, there's Ron Paul and Kucinich are my two favorite.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we as a North American, we're not discerning enough to want to vote for these people, because these people might take away the carrots. They might take away the bonuses. They might actually straighten something out, you
might
see?
Bring us back to reality a little bit.
We don't really want to give up our personal perks. We want the other guy to do that.
Mm.
And we want the police to put them in order. But God, don't touch us. Now, what has happened now, and we have, in the States, you have a bill called, I can never remember the name of it. I've got it, H.R. 875. It is a bill which has the capacity of wiping out everything but the Monsanto farms.
Right, that's an agricultural bill that will help end organic family farming.
They have had a program since World War II to systematically demolish the family farm.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are a few stragglers left, and people are trying to go organic, etc.
Yeah.
Now, the way you do it, I mean, you can't, if you don't want to imprison people and basically attack what they're doing, you set up laws under which they have to comply to regulations that they can't meet.
Mm.
For instance, in this agricultural law, you can no longer have seed sorting machinery without having a separate building for every seed.
Oh,
and a separate machine for every seed,
which
costs several $1 million, right?
Right, right.
Now, you tell me how the little organic, I mean, like myself, I collect seed, okay?
Good.
Under this, I wouldn't be allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing is happening here with Bill C-6. Bill C-6 is setting up rules and regulation that are designed to remove personal independence, local integration, local determination, globalization had one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to demolish the local infrastructure in such a way that the multinationals could just simply wipe up and buy up everything and control everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now you come in with laws that make ordinary living illegal. Now, once those laws are in place, and we're not bright enough to actually read these laws, our MPs and our congressmen, they don't read these things, they just rubber stamp them. And of course, then you, they read something. I noticed in the 90s that every law had search and seizure written into them. And that really alerted me.
Okay, sure.
It didn't matter how innocuous the law was, it had search and seizure provisions in it.
Okay, so, yeah, the dismantling of our personal freedoms.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, in other words, we already have so many laws on the books, several of them passing right now. Do you see people in the streets protesting against this? Who's paying attention to Bill C-7 and Bill C-6?
Yeah. Well, for one, they're not brought to us by our traditional media, you know, on TV and newspapers. They're glossed over.
Who owns the media?
Yeah.
The same corporate moguls. Yeah. They own the media. They own here's the octopus. They own the media. They own every person who works for these companies knows if he steps out of line, his job is gone. They've got mortgages, so they shut up, okay?
Yeah.
Who owns the entertainment? Who owns the educational system? Yeah. Why do they want to privatize everything? Because they want to take things from the public domain and put it under the jurisdictional domain of the corporations. Mm. That means that everything that affects your life will be decided in the corporate boardroom. Yeah. Then you have this thing called secrecy and proprietary license, so that no one is allowed to go into a corporation and dig out what they're doing, because, after all, that's only their business.
Well, it's state secret. If not, it's a security risk to our national corruptness, I suppose.
You know, actually, when people say, oh, there's not a conspiracy, people wonder why Kennedy was shot.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to read you a quote. I think I sent it to you. Kennedy knew exactly what was happening, and he wanted to dismantle the Federal Reserve.
That's right.
And he wanted to come in with a national bank. And this is what he wrote. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. But we are opposed around the world by a ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system that has conscripted vast resources in the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines the military, the intelligence, the economic, the scientific, and the political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No secret is revealed. That is why, I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent. Now, that was in a speech from President Kennedy in 1961.
To the media. He was speaking specifically to the media, and that
That's
they
right.
should start doing their job. That's right.
That's right. But, you see, this man knew exactly
mm-hmm.
what he was doing. And then after World War II, you had this octopus has been operative for a couple hundred years, okay? Actually, it goes back further than that, but they reorganized under Weishaupt or whatever his name was, and then they hid themselves in the secret society of the Masonic 33rd degree of the Masonic order,
mm-hmm.
and nobody except the 33rd degree knew what was going on, okay?
Yeah.
But it was an organization that was pledged to secrecy, so that's where they hide, you see?
Yeah.
But if I can find the quote here.
While you're looking, that Kennedy quote certainly is powerful. And one thing that baffles me when speaking and reading different political theorists is that conspiracy topic. You know, so many of them will use it to try to discredit people who are trying to bring up issues that are seldom talked about, and myself, I tend to believe that the world works by conspiracy. I don't think that the major decisions are accidents or kerfumbles.
Well, like the word conspiracy simply means agenda. Mm. And it simply means an agenda that is kept secret.
An agreement, yeah.
Secret. It doesn't mean that it, anything other than it is a planned agenda that we're not publicizing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, sure, there's lots of it. Now, this is 1948, right after World War II, everything went into high gear in terms of getting all the ducks in order, okay?
Okay. Yeah, they're creating the Red Scare at that time as well to keep people
exactly.
in line.
Exactly. I mean, you can't build up a great military if you don't have an enemy. Okay.
Yeah.
In fact, Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI, said the individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so large it's too difficult to believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think you know about Len Horowitz. You've heard of him?
I'm not too sure I do, actually.
Oh, well, okay. Well,
tell me who he is.
Well, Len Horowitz is the one who's trying to expose all this stuff, but he started actually getting into this. Do you remember that dentist that infected that girl down in the States with HIV?
Oh, I'm not too sure I know that story, but okay.
Oh, well, anyway, it was on the news everywhere. I can't remember her name. That's my downfall's names.
Right.
And this fellow kept saying, my government has done this to me. My government has done this to me. And Len Horowitz at that time was in the public health employ, and he was told to investigate this guy.
Okay, is he American or Canadian?
American.
Okay.
And he said this guy had the absolute profile of a psychopath. And he gave him a stack of papers that were about 6 to 8 inches high. And he said as I was going through this, there were a few of them that just leapt out at him. At a lecture that I went to from Len Horowitz, he said, I was in possession of this material, and for 2 years I was in denial. I was in denial because I could not conceive of a mind that evil.
Mm.
So we can't get our heads around the fact that there are people that are so evil that it's almost incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen to this mindset. This is George Kennan, the former head of the U.S. Department Policy Planning Staff, 1948.
Okay.
We are about 60% of the world's wealth, but only 6.3% of its population. In this situation, we cannot fail to be the object of envy and resentment. Our real task in the coming period is to devise a pattern of relationships that will permit us to maintain this position of disparity. In other words, to make sure that nobody else gets a piece of the pie, okay?
Sure.
We need not deceive ourselves that we can afford today the luxury of altruism and world benefaction. In other words, we can't afford to be really, we always say, oh, we're trying to develop the third world. The third world would not be starving if we hadn't taken the land from them, if we hadn't brought them the corporate green revolution. We've done everything to put them into the position of poverty and genocide.
Yeah.
And then we say, oh, well, these people just haven't got it, right?
Mm.
To maintain this position of disparity, the U.S. economic military supremacy, we will have to dispense with all sentimentality and daydreaming. We should cease to talk about vague and unreal objectives such as human rights and raising the living standard and democratization. The day is not far off when we are going to have to deal in straight power concepts.
Wow.
The less we are then hampered by idealistic slogans, the better. Now, that has been the thinking for the last 50 years.
And that was 48?
That was 1948.
Wow, that's before the Bilderbergers even...
That's
wow.
right.
Huh.
That's right.
That is amazing.
Now, David Rockefeller, we are on the verge of a global transformation. All we need is the right major crisis, and the nations will accept the New World Order. And, of course, you know what Kissinger said, eh?
He said lots of things. He's usually quite honest, though. That's the amazing thing. He tells the truth so often.
They have their ducks so well placed. Mm. The thing is that they have their people bought and paid for. Look, we have Campbell sitting here. He's already sold 200 of our rivers to the multinationals to put our rivers and our water under the jurisdictional domain of the multinational corporations, and there are actually applications for all the rest. Okay, we have Harper in Ottawa. Do you notice that they don't do things through Parliament? They do everything through ordering council.
Yeah, that's right.
Down in the States, it's executive orders.
Yeah, just skip the democracy part of the government.
Oh, so in other words, they're already operating as little dictators.
Yeah.
And then they have this thing, secrecy for national security, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is what Kissinger said. Today, Americans will be outraged if troops entered L.A. Tomorrow, they'll be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
This is especially true if they were told they were a threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, which threatened their very existence. It is then that people will plead with their leaders to deliver them people, and individual rights will be willingly relinquished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now Brzezinski is the one that wrote the New American...
The Grand Chessboard.
The Chessboard, and then the other one, the American...
The PNAC document, Project for a New American Century?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. Now, he said... It may be difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy except in the circumstances of a truly massive and widely perceived external threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, on the Council for Foreign Relations, right, in 2001, there is a chance for, now this, after 9/11 was, there's a chance for the president to use this disaster to carry out a phrase his father only used once, the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
They are so confident because they have all their ducks in order. Why are their ducks in order? Because just like in Argentina, they have found their people that are corruptible. They're on their side because they've got Swiss bank accounts that are just overflowing.
Mm-hmm.
None of these banks, by the way, that are, quote, being bailed out, actually went bankrupt. They had... billions and billions. They've never had such big profits as in the last years. After all, they're collecting interest on money they didn't actually put out. However, all of the elites have people who want the perks and who they're paying off very well and who are very loyal and who also belong to secret organizations and from child on have been brainwashed into a way of thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that it doesn't matter whether it's the judges or whether it's the police or whether it's the educational system or whether it's the government itself. It doesn't matter where you go, you've got people who won't let you go any further.
Right.
You can't bring a case against Bush. Why? Because there isn't a judge anywhere that's going to prosecute him.
Mm.
And so law doesn't matter. What did Bush say? He said that laws are just a piece of paper.
Mm. Right, yeah.
He was above the law, right?
Mm. So the North American Union is widely suggested to be part of this New World Order in which, you know, we're consolidating, former countries into now regions.
Well, you see, that you do things in steps.
Yeah.
You want a one world government. Now, this means that everybody in the world is going to have to live on the same standards. That means the people in India and the people in North America and the people in Europe have the same problems and have to solve them the same way. I mean, straight insanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
my question was, are they a little bit behind on the North American Union?
No, they've just rephrased it. Everybody was getting alarmed. In fact, I just had an email the other day. Just when you thought it was gone, it's back again.
Okay.
What they do is they regroup and they bring it in under another name. And this, for instance, this name changing. Everyone... is aware of the Illuminati now and the Masonics, and right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what did they do? What did they do in England? They hid under a charity and they called it Common Purpose.
Hmm.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Well,
it's nothing more than the old Masonic order.
Right.
The Illuminati functioning through a secret society.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about a common purpose, doesn't that sound rather disarming?
Well, sure, they always, butter up their,
exactly.
their propaganda.
And so what the elites decided was that they would make a bloc in Europe, the European Union, which they're finding out now is a dictatorship. The people didn't believe it originally. And then the North American Union, and then there's an Asian Union, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then through the World Trade Organization, you harmonize all of the rules and regulations so that all of them in the name of trade. You see, it's no longer important whether something is good or bad, and you must definitely have no more innovation. You must make sure that everybody is trading on the same rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you notice that with harmonization, nobody can come up with a new idea?
Well, what it appears that they're calling for is a global financial system in which...
That's the next step. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
First you make these blocks because people can kind of live with being coordinating with their neighbor, right? And then you come in and you draw these blocks. You kind of dissolve the blocks and make it just one world government. Now, the last thing that we need is a global world Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve is not federal. The Federal Reserve is owned by the Bank of London. The Bank of London are the Rothschild financiers.
Yeah.
The Rothschild financiers were the financiers for the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the British Empire may have lost its actual land, they have never given up their influence. And so, therefore, they're still pulling the financial strings of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really very insidious. Now, I'm very, very, very concerned at this point with what's happening to the health system and to the food system. Because if you control and own the food system and the health system, you literally own the people.
Yeah, yeah.
You control
their life and
death.
Yeah.
And the reason that you have genetically engineered foods is because if you have a patent is nothing but a certificate of ownership, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they are desperately working very hard to get a patent on every single thing you eat.
Yeah.
Now, the Monsantos have got the government, first of all, they should never have allowed a patent on life, but they did.
Yeah.
Because they had their people in government, right?
Mm.
Now, Monsanto has written their contract with the farmers in such a way that if Monsanto contaminates your field with their genetic seeds, then they can confiscate your land.
Yeah, yeah, it's brilliant. It's so corrupt.
I mean, and now as they're bankrupting the farmers. By the way, all these farmers that were enticed to grow corn, and it's all genetically engineered corn, for ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were promised a certain price, and now with the collapse, they're not being paid that price, okay?
Right, okay.
Huh. And so those farmers are now going bankrupt again.
Yeah.
What, it doesn't matter whether it's the farm or whether it's Argentina or whether it's you as a personal citizen. The primary objective is this. Get the debt load so high that you cannot pay the interest. Therefore, you go bankrupt. Therefore, we can come in and foreclose.
Mm-hmm.
We can come in and take everything you own.
Yeah.
But in the terms of the medical system, well, the food system is insidious. In Iraq, it's illegal for the people of Iraq to grow their own food. They're not allowed to gather their own seeds, and they're not allowed to plant their old varieties. In fact, they've been literally eradicated. And because they had a wonderful food, a seed bank in Iraq of all the varieties that go back, species that go back 1,000 years.
Okay.
And the first thing the Americans did was confiscate that.
Hmm.
And then Brenner came in with a law that said that the Iraqis could not gather their own seed and would have to buy their seed from Monsanto. Now, this means that the Iraqis are going to have to eat genetically engineered food. If you want to exercise genocide, then feed that population genetically engineered food, and I guarantee you that you will have totally abnormal children in the first and second generation.
Not to mention a healthy diet of depleted uranium toxicity.
I mean, it's genocide at every level.
Yeah.
Now, you see, when you have some a society which is as mechanized as we are, you look at these factories and everything is being done by a robot of some kind or other, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't need as many people. So everybody who isn't absolutely needed in the production cycle, they consider to be useless eaters. Mm-hmm. Anybody who is retired is a useless eater. It's a drain, okay? Pensions are a drain. And so they want to get rid of 80% of the population. Now, I don't know whether you follow this avian flu thing.
A little bit.
Okay, have you noticed that the avian flu, you know, hits the media every half hour, on the hour, for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then it disappears, right?
Okay, yeah.
Every time that they have slaughtered all the chickens where in China or wherever the avian flu has turned up, and here, the big multinationals, meat enterprises like Tyson Meats, moves in. So this is a way to eradicate the small producer.
Okay, okay.
Right now, I can't get organic eggs or free-range eggs because the person that I get it from cannot get the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Vancouver says I'm allowed to have chickens in my backyard, but, I mean, what a double talk if I can't get the chickens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, good point.
You know, so it sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
But who's going to... Now, if you can control the seeds, then you can control whether people have famine or not.
Yeah, and of course they have those Terminator seeds as well. I mean, if that isn't the devil's work, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I wrote an article, I think it was 50 years ago, and I called it the recipe for famine.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I gave another lecture in 1975, and I called it the economic noose.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do a whole program on that.
Inge Henley, we are getting towards the end of our show. I was wondering, being that you live in Vancouver,
yes,
if you have any insight into the Olympics coming to Vancouver in less than a year. Do you have thoughts on this event?
Well, when we said that we had the Olympics, I actually said to my husband, the Olympics will not take place. But when you stop and think of the fact that now, in the name of security, they're going to shut this city down so that thousands of people can't go to work for 4 weeks. What are they going to pay their mortgage with?
Mm, yeah.
I mean, this whole security thing is so bizarre. Now, I'll say this to the people. If you want to be protected completely, whoever protects you completely owns you completely.
There you go.
So if you don't want to be owned, if you don't want to be enslaved, then start protecting yourself and stop asking the government to do it for you. These are all fabricated, manufactured terror activities. They do them all. Every major terror event has been manufactured and is a false flag operation.
Okay.
If somebody really wants to, they could have one anyway. This isn't going to stop. It's going to cost $1 billion. We will never, ever get ourselves out of debt from the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But if I can say just one thing.
Okay.
Will people who are listening please do everything in their power to always resist any mandatory medication or vaccination from on high, because whenever you agree that the government is going to practice medicine, you have already agreed that the government owns your body.
Mm. Yeah, interesting point. Okay. Inge Henley, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, you've certainly touched on numerous topics within this New World Order octopus and its corporate hierarchy.
Each one of those tentacles could be a whole program, you know.
Absolutely, it sure could. do you have any websites or authors or...
Not really.
Anything that you want to suggest that listeners search for more information on?
Not on that. But if people want to know that we were given a cure for cancer in 1930, they might look up the following website.
Okay, yeah, I've read a little bit about that, so tell me what you have.
William, F as in Frank, Koch, KOCH.com. And you will find two books there, Birth of a Science and the Survival Factor in Neoplastic and Viral Diseases. And you will find that he literally revolutionized medicine.
Okay, give me that name again, William F.
Koch, KOCH.
KOCH.com. Thank you.
And he had a 90% cure for cancer, and he had a cure for all viral diseases. He knew how to stimulate the immune system with one homeopathic shot.
Hmm. Yeah, I've read that name in the past, and that's one I've been wanting to look further into, so thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Okay, Inga, I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you once again for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure, and you're a wealth of information and opinion, and thanks, and I hope we can do it again in the future.
Yeah, I have to apologize for being kind of all over the map, but...
Hey, that's okay. This show is allowed to... You're allowed to do that.
Okay, thanks a million.
Okay, take care. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, very nice. There's a couple things I wanted to get onto. One, returning to the idea of Bush coming to Calgary yesterday to speak. Doug Brinkman in Edmonton has a speaker's corner from yesterday. Interesting discussion by this one bystander. And then he follows, Doug that is, follows it up with the John Stewart covering Bush's visit. And John Stewart is becoming one of the better news anchors out there, even though he works for Comedy Central. That's where you... that's kind of funny that he's more honest about a lot of things than so-called news places. So we're going to start with that, and then we're going to hear Dennis Kucinich talking about the Fed, as well as Noam Chomsky, and that will do it for tonight's show. So there we are. Let's move on to... the latest installment of the Edmonton Speaker's Corner. This one is talking about Bush's visit to Calgary yesterday. So I'll be back with you. I'll say goodbye before 10 o'clock, so we'll talk to you then. Thanks.
Officials down in Calgary.
That's a crime.
How's that?
It's a free country.
But he's committed war crimes. Other people.
That's debatable. Because to point the finger only at one guy, he's part of the system down there.
Yeah.
He's part of the military machinery. You can't just point the finger at him and say that's the problem. It's billions and billions of dollars. The corporate world. Today on the news, the AIG, $165 million. That's the corporate world. Point the finger at one man is wasting your time.
Are referring to the tortures that took place in Guantanamo Bay, Abu Ghraib. What are your thoughts on that?
You're wasting your time if you point the finger at one guy. We train our guys to be bad motherfuckers, to go over and kill people and save their ass. You and I are part of that. Money is making things happen. And so how do you know, like you, to ask you, how do we fix this? How do we bring in honesty and decency and counteract that mighty dollar that is responsible for all the pollution? You know, we live in a world right now where with this economic depression, environmentally, we're probably way better off. There's less cars, there's less driving. Syncrude has slowed down. Other factories or refineries have been put on hold. So people want money. So we'll pollute. Well, this is a real conundrum, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Money.
Absolutely.
We need it, but it's killing us.
Mr. Bush had to run to the most conservative city, Calgary, in the nicest nearby country, Canada, and still they needed high security to keep the protesters away. Mr. Bush arrived last night not getting out of his car, did not press the pledge, and not shake some hands with all those people who were not his fans, who did not line the road on his way to a restaurant where he did not dine in a public area. For his lunchtime speech today, Mr. Bush was greeted by a couple of hundred protesters, enraging even Canadians enough to throw things and get arrested, while Mr. Bush, basking in his popularity, snuck through an underground tunnel from his hotel to the private luncheon where no media was allowed, and no one was allowed to record it or photograph it. It was called a conversation with George W. Bush. Conversation being Bush should speak for, I converse, you pay $400 Canadian to hear me converse. The protesters outside joining the group Warriors Against the War call on Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper to bar Bush from the country or arrest him for torture and other war crimes. Lawyer Gail Davidson, having explained on his news hour last night that Canadian law bars suspected war criminals from entering her country.
Okay, my mistake there. That, of course, wasn't John Stewart. That was Keith Olbermann. So let's carry on with that, shall we? Okay, there we go. That's post-fix fighting to win. I'm going to finish up now with a short piece by Democratic representative out of Ohio, Dennis Kucinich, talking about nationalizing the Fed. And then we're going to follow that up with the 8-minute excerpt from a 50-minute documentary, which is called Money Talks, Profit Before Patient Safety. So that's going to do it for tonight's show. I'd like to thank the guests, telephone guests with Splitting the Sky and Professor Tony Hall there in Lethbridge. They took part in, ungreeting Bush in Calgary yesterday. And then likewise had about an hour-long conversation with Inga Hanley, an activist and truth teller out of Vancouver. So thanks to them, and we'll be back doing it again next week. So be well out there.
Doctors started telling me these stories about drugs and therapies that they were prescribing, and they were shocked. They were horrified because they find out that these therapies, one after another, were actually causing more harm than good. And they wanted to know how it happened. They couldn't believe that they were giving medicines to people that were actually, in some instances, killing patients.
In general, the main character's experience is closely based on my own experience, and I worked for the industry for about 10 years.
There are over 80,000 pharmaceutical salespeople employed by the drug industry in the United States alone. My understanding is that's about one for every four doctors. Their job is to sell drugs. Their job is not to educate doctors. Their job is not to provide medical information. They have one job and one job only, to push their products, particularly against other competing products.
I don't think any of us, if we decided we wanted to buy a new car, would say, well, it's really hard to go out and search and learn everything about all the new cars, so I'm going to go to the maker of a given car and ask him, is it a good car? We would understand that we really couldn't trust what that person told us, and that that wouldn't be better than no information. In fact, in some ways, it would be worse than no information.
Let's be honest. They're there to sell their drug. They're not there to educate doctors. They get paid. They get bonuses on how much drugs the doctor prescribes, not whether the doctor is prescribing the most appropriate drugs. So I don't think any doctor would get their information from reps if it wasn't for that the information came with free food and other sorts of perks. If you took away all that stuff, in the 21st century, I don't think too many doctors would be getting their information from reps.
Before 1980, most clinical research was funded by the National Institutes of Health. Academic researchers, quote, snubbed their noses at doing commercially funded research. When President Reagan came into office, the economy was slow, the ethos was small government, and the NIH funding of clinical studies went down dramatically. The drug companies were very happy to come in and lend a helping hand. Nothing much changed until 1991. Because the studies were still being done in universities. But during the 90s, most of that research got pulled out of universities and was brought to for-profit research organizations. Now, nothing inherently unethical about that. It was more efficient and quicker for the drug companies. The problem is that gave virtual complete control over the research to the drug companies. They could design the studies. They have control of data so that many of the authors of the most important articles published in our best journals aren't even allowed to see their own data.
The data are so hidden and so complex, whether it's gene therapy or whether it's the number of people who die of heart attacks while taking Vioxx. We have to rely on researchers to provide us with that evidence. And I think the most shocking thing is to find that evidence is simply not available, or it is distorted. And some of it is hidden as trade secrets. Federal trade secrets laws, commercial interests, allow drug companies to withhold some of this information. And I just recently found out, for example, that the Food and Drug Administration does not report all the deaths it knows about in patients who are on certain drugs because these are considered federal trade secret.
The data that I found on the FDA's website showed for Vioxx that in the company's own study, in Merck's own study called the Vigor study, where Vioxx was compared to naproxen or Aleve sold over the counter, Vioxx is no more effective than Aleve, but the important thing is that the manufacturer's own data shows that Vioxx causes significantly more cardiovascular complications, heart attacks, blood clots, and strokes, more than Aleve. And overall, Vioxx is a more dangerous drug than Aleve. So that if I, as a family doctor, prescribed Vioxx for 100 patients in a row, within the next year, there would be 2.5 serious complications because I treated those patients with Vioxx instead of Aleve. The New England Journal of Medicine article that was published in November of 2000 that was supposedly based on reporting that research failed to include those two crucial pieces of information.
The reason 20 million people took Vioxx and many millions took Celebrex was because of the advertising. It's because consumers saw Dorothy Hamill skating around on their televisions in those Vioxx ads we've all seen, that so many people took Vioxx. So that's a perfect example of how drug advertising totally skewed what drugs people took and how much they paid. Because Vioxx was many, many more times more expensive than a bottle of ibuprofen, which for most people would have been just as effective. And not only would they not have paid more, it wouldn't have been a heightened risk for heart attacks.
And though industry will say the marketing costs don't affect the cost of drugs, they do say the research costs affect the cost of drugs. So though I'm not an economist, I don't see how you can have one but not the other, and that in fact, just like the research costs may affect drug costs, I guess that marketing costs probably affect them too.
If there's anything in American or Western society that sort of dominates our cultural life, it's advertising. Advertising costs millions of dollars for the Super Bowl for a minute, and the reason it does is because it works. Because by spending a few million dollars on advertising, you make billions of dollars. And the drug industry is very good at advertising.
There were many of my own patients that I could not convince that these drugs weren't better. They would come in asking for Vioxx and Celebrex, and I would say, look, I know as much about this as anyone in the country who's not working in the drug companies, and these are not better drugs. And my patients would say, well, I saw them advertised.
Right now, the FDA does not require drug companies to submit television ads or any other drug ads before they air. They only have to submit them after the fact. So the ad will already be on TV or in a magazine. And the FDA, if it eventually gets around to doing something about it and it considers deceptive, may be too late.
I think it's really short-sighted to think that this is a matter of bad drug companies or bad people pulling things over on us. They're doing what they're supposed to do. If we want it to be different, we have to insist on it. And the ways in which we insist on it is multi-pronged, but it includes our government. Of course it does. Right now, our government is not terribly interested in making any reforms that would be useful because they're very beholden to drug companies. If we want to change that, we have to make them beholden to us. We have to have the clout and the influence in the organization to make it that they can't blithely go along making the FDA be something that has been widely and famously called a servant of the drug industry. We have to make it the FDA is a servant of us.
I do believe that ultimately the responsibility lies with the physician who's going to write the prescription. And that's why I feel that one of the biggest things we can do, one of the biggest solutions we can provide here is raise this awareness with physicians and future physicians about the tactics the industry uses to promote their drugs.
Now it's a bipartisan issue to restore confidence in our medical knowledge. And unless politicians from both sides of the aisle step up to the plate, it's not going to happen. And that won't happen unless the public demands that their politicians do so.